The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, I have a neighbour called Hank, and Hank is an Uber driver. So I often get Hank to drive me to and from the airport. And just last year, I landed and I texted Hank, okay, I've arrived. And he texts back, great, text me when you get out. So when I'm out, I text him, hey, I'm out. He texts back, great, I'll be there soon. After a while, I say, hey, I can't see you. He goes, well, where are you? And I go, LOL, are you at domestic? I'm at international. He goes, no, I'm in international. I go, the express one? He goes, yeah, the express. I say, well, I'm where the yellow sign is. He goes, yeah, I'm where the yellow sign is. Well, I'm curbside. Yeah, I'm curbside. Well, where are you? I don't know. Where are you? Oh, there you are. Oh, yeah, I see you now. Okay, I'll be there soon. So I jump in the car. Then I said to Hank, you know what? We could have just called each other. Why do we have to keep texting? And then we realize, you know what? No one talks anymore. That's why. So these days we don't know how to talk. So we either shout or we don't talk at all. And we certainly don't know how to talk about important things, and we don't know how to talk about God. And that's okay, because God talks to us. And in the Bible, one main way that God talks to us is by sending his son Jesus. So if you've been coming, you know I've been using this photo I got off the internet. It's not Jesus, but I think if Jesus was around today, this is what he would look like. A short, tanned, nondescript, Middle Eastern male walking around the countryside of Palestine speaking Aramaic. And in this series of talks, each week, one by one, we've looked at Jesus meeting a different character in the Bible and then asking the question, what would Jesus say to this person? And what is Jesus saying to me today? And for our final talk in the series, Jesus has just met a centurion. And our question is this, what would Jesus say to one stuck in the middle, a middle manager, someone stuck on the corporate ladder? You know, when we think centurion, this is what we think a centurion should look like. And I got this photo off the internet. It's a stock photo because we think, hey, that's what a centurion looks like. But I think if a centurion was around today, this is what he would look like. He would look like a middle manager. Because we have just read, he says, I give orders, but I also take orders. You know, when I was a med student, the nurses told me what to do. But when I became a junior doctor, I got to tell the nurses what to do, but now the senior doctors told me what to do. When I became a senior doctor, I got to tell the junior doctors what to do, but now the consultants told me what to do. We're always being told what to do. And so in our 20s, we studied hard, we got our marks. In our 30s, we jumped the corporate hoops, and then suddenly in our 40s, poof, we think, oh my goodness, this is all I'm doing for the rest of my working life. I'm just being told what to do. And that's a centurion. And today he meets Jesus. Lord, my servant lies at home paralyzed, suffering terribly. And then Jesus said to him, well, shall I come and heal him? But the centurion replied, Lord, I don't deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed. And he said, truly, I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. Now, this is a part of the Bible I don't quite get. You know, these days, social etiquette is so hard. Like, when a guy comes to you, you used to just shake his hand. But now, does he want the fist bump? Because I don't know how to do that. Does he want the high five? That's awkward. And now, sometimes it's not just a handshake. You got to do this afterwards. Shoulder bump, pat each other on the back, and finger snap on the way out. And I don't know how to do that. And it's even worse when it's a woman. Because you go and shake her hand, and no, I think she wants the hug. Is it the hug without a kiss or with a kiss? If it's with a kiss, is it the mwah, mwah, air kiss? Or is it the glancing kiss? I don't know. So I just give them all the non-verbal communication saying, back off, do not come near me because I don't know what to do with you. And that seems to be what the centurion has done to Jesus. Back off, stay where you are because I don't know what to do with you. But somehow Jesus is amazed And he says this is faith. So what is going on? Well, we need to hear the three things that Jesus says to this man and the three things that Jesus is saying to us today. Number one, don't put your trust in traditional sources of power. Many will come, Jesus says, from the east and the west, and they will take their places at a feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. Those who are once on the outside will now be inside, but the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Those who are inside will now be outside. What is going on here? Well, when I was living in America, my toe got infected and it needed antibiotics. And had I been in Australia, I'm a doctor, I'm qualified, it would have been easy. I could have written my own prescription, got my own antibiotics, or could have seen a buddy, doctor, friend, they would have got me antibiotics. But I was in the USA where my medical qualifications, my university degree, were worthless. They were worth less than toilet paper. And Jesus is saying the same thing. Don't put your trust in traditional sources of authority and power. Don't put your trust in tradition, in religion, in your family, in your networks, in your qualifications, because in Jesus' kingdom, they will be worthless. They'll be worth as much as toilet paper. And elsewhere, Jesus says, the first will be last, and the last will be first. The hospital surgeon will find themselves the cleaner, and the cleaner will be the surgeon. The judge will find themselves the criminal, and the criminal will be the judge. The university lecturer will find themselves the student, and the student will become the university lecturer. And that's why the centurion gets in. He's the outsider. He's the foreigner. He's the blue-collar, working-class guy. And now he's inside. He's a people of God, and he's feasting at the kingdom of God. And as Aussies, we love this. We love this message from Jesus, because as Aussies, we're anti-authority. We root for the underdog. We like to stick it to the man. So we love how Jesus is the deconstructionist here. Because as Aussies, we hate authority. So when a sign says, don't walk, and there are no cars, buddy, I'm walking. We hate authority. We love going to a cafeteria having a food fight. But at the same time, part of me likes authority. You know, if I go to a hospital, I don't want the cleaner doing my operation. If I go to a court, I don't want the criminal to be my judge. And when I go to university, I want to learn from the professor. I don't want to learn from the student. And that's why we hated group work in university, didn't we? We paid all that money for that class. We want to learn from the professor, not from this bozo next to me who knows less than me. So part of me wants authority. And it's okay if a pedestrian doesn't stop at a red light, but I want cars to stop at red lights. And every now and then when I go to a cafeteria, I actually want to eat. I don't just want to have a food fight. So I do need some authority. And that brings us to the second thing that Jesus says. Well, trust in Jesus as a new source of authority and power. The centurion replied, Lord, I don't deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. Well, what's going on here? Well, this is my wife, Stephanie. We've been married for 22 years. And as a married man, every now and then, when you leave the house, a funny thing will happen. My wife will say to me, is that what you're wearing? Now, if you're a single guy, that sounds like a question. Is that what you're wearing? You go, yes, this is what I'm wearing. But you married men, no, no. That is a command disguised as a question. I don't like what you're wearing. Get changed. And I get changed. Why? Because she has authority over me. See, you have no authority over me. If you say to me, get changed, I will tell you to get lost. But if my wife says, get changed, I listen to her. Well, where does this authority come from? Well, it comes from at least three places. Her authority comes because we're married. We have a relationship. We have a contract, covenantal relationship. When we got married, we made promises, we signed papers. Her authority comes from her wisdom. She knows fashion in a way I don't, so I trust her judgment over mine. Her authority comes because she loves me. She wants what's best for me. So again, I trust her judgment over mine. Where does God's authority come from? He made us, He loves us and He saves us. So His authority comes because we have a relationship. He is our God. We are His people. So there's a contractual, covenantal relationship where promises have been made. God has wisdom. He knows things we don't know. So we trust His judgment over ours. And He loves us. He loves us so much. He sent His Son Jesus to die for us. So He wants what's best for us. So we trust Him. And His authority comes with a word. Just like my wife's authority comes with a word. Like, how does she get me to get changed? She doesn't hit me with a brick. She says, get changed. And with a word, I get changed. And with a word, God has authority over the universe. In the beginning, it says, God made the heavens and the earth with a word. God said, let there be light. And poof, there was light. In the New Testament, there's a story where Jesus has a dead friend called Lazarus. And Jesus, with a word, says, Lazarus, get out. And poof, Lazarus comes out of a tomb. There's a dead girl. Jesus comes up to her, holds her hand and says, my child, get up. And with a word, poof, she gets up. Jesus has authority with a word. And that's what this centurion recognizes. Jesus, I know who you are. You're the Son of God. You're the God who loves us, who made us and saves us. And with a word, you have authority. But why should I make Jesus my authority? Well, number three, because Jesus gives us the meaning, purpose, and identity that we're looking for. The centurion puts his trust in Jesus. Then Jesus said to the centurion, go, let it be done, just as you believed it would. And his servant was healed at that moment. The centurion trusts Jesus, and his servant is healed. But that doesn't mean we'll be guaranteed healing if we put our trust in Jesus. Like, we can pray that God might cure us of our asthma, our depression. We may pray that God brings our parents back together, and they're good things to pray for, and I hope God answers those prayers. But there are many counterexamples in the Bible where God chooses not to heal, not to answer prayers. So what does Jesus promise us? What does Jesus guarantee us if we put our trust in Him? Well, elsewhere in the Bible, this is what Jesus promises us. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus promises us rest. I have three boys, Toby, Cooper and Jonty. This photo is from a few weeks ago on the first day of school. And my wife and I have fallen into the parent trap. We promised ourselves it wouldn't happen, but we have fallen into the parent trap. This is the parent trap. Monday night is swimming. Tuesday night is karate. Wednesday night is football training. Thursday is clarinet lessons. Friday is band. Saturday is Saturday sports. We are maxed out. And even then, someone will say, your kids aren't doing Chinese. They need to do Chinese. You know, if they don't do a foreign language, the two parts of the brains won't talk to each other, and now they're going to fall behind. And someone else will say, they're not doing the piano. Now, I'm sorry, the clarinet is not a real instrument. The piano is a real instrument, because the clarinet's just one clef, the piano's two clefs. That gets the two parts of the brains talking together. So my wife and I, we are maxed out as parents, and even then, we don't feel like we're doing enough. How did this happen? It happened because of this. In the West, we have this unchallenged mantra that we believe to be true, and it's this. I want my children to be... Oh, I love it. It's meant to be happy. See, whenever you do this in a Chinese church, they never know how to answer. They go, successful? Doctor? Lawyer? I go, no, it's happy. You want your children to be happy. Oh, I did not know that yet. Trust me, you want your children to be happy. But here's one of the cruel ironies. By wanting our children to be happy, we're making them miserable. Jennifer Senior, in her New York Best Times seller, or New York Times bestseller list, All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. She says, in one of those cruel ironies of life, by chasing happiness, you're guaranteed not to find it. So by trying to make your children happy, you're just making them tired, stressed, and miserable. Then you got to think, hang on, if it's true of children, maybe it's true of grown-ups. Because if we're trying to make ourselves happy as well, we're also making ourselves tired, stressed, and miserable. And that's exactly what's happened. Because in the West, we got told this. In the West, we got told we must reject all forms of tradition and authority, and only I now am allowed to be my own authority. I have to keep it real, be true to myself, and only I get to tell myself what to do. But unfortunately, in one of those cruel ironies of life, we are our own bosses. Because we also got told, you got to do whatever it takes to make you happy. So now we're doing whatever it takes to make us happy. And it's just making us tired, stressed, miserable, and exhausted. And so now we work hard to pay off the house. So we're now never home to enjoy the house. We work hard for our children's future. So now we're never home for our children. We work hard to pay off the overseas holiday. But if we didn't work so hard, we wouldn't need the overseas holiday in the first place. You know, they just did this study in the USA last year, and it's calling us the exhausted majority. We're exhausted. We're just trying to survive. You know, if we had to be born any time on this planet, it would be now. If you had to choose any time you want to be in Western civilization, it'd be now, in the 21st century. Wouldn't it? Like, we've cured smallpox. We don't have any major world wars going on right now. We have free Wi-Fi at McDonald's and Starbucks. And we're living longer than we've ever lived before. And yet, we're more stressed, more anxious, and more depressed than ever before. Why? Because we rejected all other forms of authority, we made ourselves our own authorities, and we're making ourselves tired, stressed, and miserable. But Jesus says, you know what? Make me your authority. Come to me, and I will give you rest. Why? Because Jesus says, let me be your identity, meaning, and purpose. And don't invest that into your family, your children, and your work, because they will destroy you, and you will destroy them. Come to Jesus and he will give you the rest that we're looking for. So what does Jesus say to those of us who are always being told what to do? Three things. Number one, don't put your trust in traditional sources of authority and power. But number two, put your trust in Jesus as our new source of authority and power. Why? Three, because he will give us the identity, purpose, and meaning we're looking for, and so we can find rest. Just last year, my boys discovered the original Karate Kid movie for the first time. And we know the original Karate Kid movie. The Karate Kid is in a tournament. He gets Mr. Miyagi to train him. But for a long time, it's very frustrating. All he's doing is painting the fence, waxing the car, painting the fence, waxing the car. But you know, Mr. Miyagi had a purpose, a plan. So when it was a tournament, these things were the karate moves. Whoa, 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 that won the Karate Kid the tournament. He couldn't see it at the time, but now there's a wisdom, meaning, and purpose. And the same with us. Whoever we're working for, in the end, work for Jesus. Because he has the meaning and the purpose that we're looking for. I work one day a week as a surgical assistant. I hold a leg for the surgeon while he operates on it. And this is how it works in surgery. If we have five patients that day on the list, oh, it's ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. That is going to be good money. But if there's just one patient on the list, it's ka-ching, and it's miserable. It's not even going to pay for the petrol. And I had one of those days. I'm stuck in traffic, driving to the hospital, and there's just one patient on the list, and I think, why am I doing this? Woe is me. Look at me. This won't even pay the bills. And I thought, whoa, hang on. I'm doing this for Jesus. I work for Jesus. He's got a wisdom, meaning, purpose, and hope in what I do. Like, I'm not doing this for me. I'm not doing this for my boss, the surgeon. I'm doing this for Jesus. This leg I'm holding belongs to a human being in the image of God. This leg I'm holding belongs to a brother, a son, an uncle, and we're going to give him health. We're going to give him value. We're going to restore him. Now he can enjoy leisure and work and his family. Wow, because in the end, I'm not working for me. I'm not working for my boss. In the end, I'm doing for Jesus. And he's got a wisdom, a meaning, and a purpose, and a hope behind what I do. And because of that, I can find rest. All right, the question is, why in the West have we made ourselves our own source of authority? It all goes back to the Enlightenment, 1600s, where Descartes said, okay, I'm going to strip everything away, and how do I know anything be true? And he said, because I think, therefore I am, so I can be the only valid source of truth. So up until then, we, like, especially in the Asian culture, we took other forms of authority, like your family, your village, your teachers. But in the West, we got taught ever since from the 1600s onwards, because we were taught to be skeptical, not believe anything, become a blank slate, and only I can be the person that begins as my own source of authority. And so if you think about it, in the end, there's only God, tradition, family, and really ourselves, and we rejected all those forms and said only we can tell ourselves what to do. Also, a fascinating thing has happened. Like, culturally, every society debates, are human beings essentially good or are we essentially evil? And almost every civilization saw that human beings were bent, were broken. Let's face it, we're evil. So in Greek culture, in Asian culture, in most religions, we're really evil, bent and broken, and not essentially good. But suddenly from the 1600s onwards, we got taught, no, you know what, we're a blank slate, and the day we're born is the purest we will ever, ever be. And the reason why we're messed up is because of the layers of authority that came afterwards. So our parents messed us up. The schools came and then messed us up. And then the church then came and messed us up. And the politicians have come and messed us up. So we're on a journey now where we have to strip away what these people have done to us. We need to strip away the government. We need to get rid of the church. We need to get rid of what the schools taught us, and we need to get rid of what our parents did and discover the true, authentic golden me. So when we hear throwaway phrases like, you need to be true to yourself, you need to keep it real, you need to be authentic, you do you, I do me, that's actually coming from that understanding that I am pure and good and everyone else is the problem and not me. And so that's where that's come from. But now there's been pushback. So even Jonathan Haidt, a liberal, secular, atheist, Jewish psychologist, says that is what has caused the us versus them. Because if I think I'm good and I see everyone else as evil, you know, that's just going to keep polarizing us. Where even Jonathan Haidt now says we need to begin where, you know, where the Bible says, you know what, the problem is here. I'm not the good person I think I am. But that's where it's come from, because we think we're good and we can only be the valid sources of authority. And we got told then, the goal of life was happiness. You got to do whatever it takes to be happy. So that made us miserable. So now everyone's discovering, you know what the goal of life is? It's actually to be fulfilled, to fulfill your purpose. So now we're looking for purpose. But this only takes one goalpost back, because the only way you can have purpose is there was a designer. So a watch has a purpose to keep time because there was a designer. A pen has a purpose to write because it was a designer. So what is my purpose? I can only have a purpose if there was a designer, a God. And I think that's what's happened, because we got rid of God, we got rid of purpose, so we lost happiness, and we got rid of authority figures, and we got rid of evil. And they said the great irony of getting rid of evil is now there's no forgiveness. Who would have thought that would be the trade-off? So now psychologists are saying people are walking around feeling unforgiven. Because we got rid of God and we got rid of evil. But yet we know, no, hang on, there is evil and there is a God and I need forgiveness. And that was a really long answer to a very simple question. All right. The question is, there's only a handful of incidents like this in the Bible where there's a remote healing, like the centurion's servant is healed from far away. Last week we saw how that Canaanite woman's daughter was healed from far away. And Peter's incident as well. You know, I don't know. I really, really don't know, because maybe there were more, they're just not recorded. But just off the top of my head, I don't know why maybe it's happened that way. I really don't know. How can I diagnose what is my ultimate source of authority? Yesterday I answered by saying, well, how will we fill in the blank? I need to be true to blank. And so it's interesting, in the Asian culture, you'd automatically say, I need to be true to my parents. And so in Asia, you went to a guidance counselor and say, well, what should I do? The counselor will go, well, what do your parents want you to do? Like, that's an easy question to answer. So I need to be true to blank. And so for many of us Asians, it would have been my parents. In the West, for many of us, it would have been, I need to be true to myself. And so you go to guidance counselor and say, what should I do for the future? They'll look at you and say, well, what do you want to do? So what do you need to be true to yourself? But I think, I need to be true to God. Like, could I put that as my final line?
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.